Hallo bei Marketing for Changemakers, der Podcast für alle Social Entrepreneure, die lernen möchten, wie sie richtig erfolgreich im Marketing sind und gleichzeitig auf Ehrlichkeit, Transparenz und Nachhaltigkeit setzen. Du willst mit deinem Business die Welt verbessern und jeder soll von deinem Projekt erfahren? Dann bist du hier genau richtig. Du bekommst in meinem Podcast viele Tipps, Insights und Ideen, wie du dir eine richtig effektive Marketingstrategie aufbaust, die zu deinem nachhaltigen Business passt. Ich bin Sina und ich freue mich sehr, dass du eingeschaltet hast. Hello Lucas, it is great to have you in my podcast as a guest today. First of all, can you introduce yourself to everyone who might not know you? Who are you? What do you do? And what is your mission?
Well, thank you very much for having me and thank you everybody for listening to this podcast. I think it will be a very interesting one. So hear me out all the way. My name is Lucas Simons. I'm living in the Netherlands. I've been a social entrepreneur for, I would say, my whole life. Although when I was younger, we didn't have the word for it. But from a very young age, I was convinced that I wanted to do something with sustainability. And I have a whole career in sustainability. But I would say my breakthrough was when I had the opportunity to work in agriculture and setting up a, which is now a very large certification program for sustainable coffee and cocoa and tea. It's called OOT Certified. I had the privilege of starting that initiative in 2002. I was 30 years old at that time. And in a matter of a few years with the whole team, we were building what is now the largest certification program for sustainable commodities. And in 2008, I left that organization and started my own consultancy company, New Foresight, and I started another company, Scope Insight. And both organizations are working in agriculture. So this is where your coffee, tea, cocoa, soy, palm oil, sugar comes from. Mostly produced in Africa, Latin America, Southeast Asia. And I'm not sure if you knew about this, but these sectors are the most unsustainable sectors by far. It's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of farmers are dependent on their income of the production of these goods. It's the biggest driver for deforestation. It's the biggest driver for loss of biodiversity. It's the biggest driver for child labor, slavery, malnutrition, poverty. And you could easily say that almost all of the SDGs are happening in agriculture, in the production of our food on the largest scale imaginable. And my two companies are dedicated to bring systemic change to agriculture. So my consultancy company, New Foresight, we are hired by sectors, the coffee sector, the cocoa sector, the cotton sector, you name it, where all of the large players could be governments, NGOs, but also, of course, the industry are facing huge problems. And whatever they do, they don't seem to be able to solve it. And that's where we come in. We're able to help them with a more systemic view on why this is happening, why it's so difficult to change it, and then help co-create large change programs. So that's what I do with my consultancy company. And the other company, Scope Insight, is introducing, I would say, a rating initiative where we can very quickly measure the level of professionalism of farm organizations. And that sounds very technical, but we are able to go into a cooperative, a cocoa cooperative in Ivory Coast, for example, and measure how professionally they are running their business. Is there good management? Is there a business plan? Do they have their accountancy systems in order? And we can score their level of professionalism. And why is this interesting? Because we have done it thousands of times, so we have a lot of data. We can score them. We can compare them with other cooperatives. We can use the data to help structure the kind of support they need so that they become more professional over time. And we can use that data to select the farm organizations who are ready to be linked to banks or to value chains or to markets. And so with our rating initiative, we want to set the global standard for this is how you measure how professional farm organizations are, and this is how you can link them to markets. So this is who I am. I'm a father of three, wrote a book, Changing the Food Game. If you're interested in why do markets fail and how do you change that on a large scale, yeah, and happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you very, very much for introducing yourself. It sounds very, very interesting. Maybe you can give a little bit more insights now about your marketing, the marketing of your businesses. So how important is a good and clear structured marketing strategy for social business? And yes, what's the most important part or first step from your perspective to build such a good marketing strategy?
Yeah, for every business, marketing is crucial. I believe marketing is everything. If you have a good marketing strategy, well, of course, the five P's are already saved, but it starts with knowing your client, what they really need, your products, your people, your promotion, etc. So marketing is really everything. And also, whether you're a social enterprise or a normal business, marketing is key. But also, indeed, for us, we are not promoting ourselves as a do-gooder or a social enterprise or on a mission type of organization. We are on a mission, but first and foremost, we are here to serve our clients, solve a big need. And so we want to do good by doing well, then we need to earn our money. And that means that we need to serve our clients. And for that, marketing is important. And I will always promote the added value of my services rather than the fact that I am on a mission or that I'm so great. Now, how did we start? It took me a while to figure out. Traditional textbook suggests that you need to think about or segment your clients and think about what do they need. And then you need to provide that with your solutions and your services. For me, the ball started rolling when I turned it around. And I didn't start with my clients in mind, but I started with what's my ideal work? What do I want to do? What is it that I'm best at? So ideal work first. And I did it for both my companies. I'm at my best when I am able to do this. And I'm not at my best if I'm doing that. So I don't want to do that anymore. So ideal work first. And then based on that is, who is my ideal client? So what client wants to have that type of work? So I reverse the order. Ideal work, ideal client. And then we ask ourselves, what does this ideal client need? What are their questions behind the questions? And of course, how can we help them? What does our service contribute to that? And then finally, why should that client call us? So what are our USPs? What are our unique selling points? And based on that, we have developed our marketing strategy. And in there is, of course, that we are B Corp certified. We have a lot of impact, et cetera, et cetera. But first and foremost, we are marketing ourselves as the best consultancy company and the best rating organization to solve your problems, if that makes sense.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Can you give a little bit more insights into what kind of tools and channels you use in marketing so that we get maybe a little bit more practical picture of your marketing?
Yeah. So the channels, perhaps that's for me most most easiest to answer. Of course, we have our websites, but we use webinars a lot. And I just told you before we started the interview, one of the things that I do most and almost on a two times, three times a week is that I'm asked to be a keynote. So I'm pretty good on stage. I have a very clear message. I'm well trained to make sure that the audience is taking on a journey and involved and engaged in high energy talk. And so I'm frequently asked to be on conferences or workshops, etc. Now, one, that is a paid activity, so it's a business case in itself, but it is by far the best marketing that I can think of. Because if you have 500 to 1,000 to 3,000 people in the room, and you are able to tell a story in a captivating way, then first of all, they will remember you much more than a website. But if you do it well, you walk away with business. And so there are tips and tricks on how to do that, on how to go on stage from the very first second, on how to engage them. There are tricks and tips on how to make sure that they see you as an authority. And there are ways of telling your story in a way that they learn something. It's truly valuable, but they also want to have more. And if you can leave the stage, first of all, with a check in your hands, second of all, that you have delivered a message that changed their ways of thinking around sustainability or around what you think is important, and thirdly, that you leave with a handful of business cards that you can follow up, in my case, that's by far the best marketing. Another one is a book. Like I said, I wrote a book, Changing the Food Game. It cost me a year of my life, and I'm not exaggerating here. I got a young family, and it took me every evening and weekend, but I forced myself to put my thinking on paper, and I published it. And by now, I think 6,000 copies have been sold. It's not about the money that you're earning there, but it is people take you so much more seriously when you have a book. You're being asked for these keynotes, as I mentioned earlier. And well, in my case, my clients are buying them and giving them to their employees or to their suppliers or to their clients. And so I've noticed that writing a book with my vision on sustainable agriculture and how do you solve it has been a major move terms of marketing.
Thank you very much. Very interesting. Do you also work with marketing agencies or other consultants? And if so, do you have kind of a code of honor to choose with whom you work together?
We certainly have a code of honor, but that's for our work, for our how we do our teams. It's not really about marketing, but we have a code of honor, which we've identified. We have 14 values that we take very seriously. Just a little tip, what we do every Monday is we start the week with a huddle where everybody stands in a circle and we start by giving each other compliments based on those 14 values. So we compliment each other, recognizing each other on how well that other person did something which was a great expression or a great example of one of the values. And we have 14 jars at our office here. And every week you're supposed to, a couple of times, put beans in that jar of examples of the jar that you can think of that we really lived that moment. And then every month we're counting the beans. It's part of our selection procedure. It's part of our recruitment on our evaluation. And so we're taking that code of honor very seriously. But that's not so much what we use with the selection of marketing agencies. Question, no, we don't. One is we find them usually, but this is consultants in general, expensive. And in our case, you really need to understand agriculture. You need to understand how we do it, our vision. And so it's great to use agents, but they bring, I would say, traditional or regular marketing knowledge, models. And what we found is that the best marketing for us is not to have the best website, although we need a great website, or to have the best brochures or the best avatars or all of those marketing things, but is to educate our clients, to be the leader on content marketing. And so for that, we couldn't find agencies, really. We had to train ourselves, and who else is best to explain what we're doing than ourselves. So we are not working with agencies. And we are working not so much with consultants, but with experienced people who every now and again we invite, and then they can reflect and respond on what we're doing. And we get a lot of ideas from that, but then we take it on board ourselves again.
Great. As a CEO of your two companies, can you maybe share some practical marketing best practices, or maybe also marketing best practices from your partners you already worked with? Do you have any practical ideas?
So let's take one organization, the one with the rating. If we have rated over 3,000 farmer organizations worldwide, so we have a lot of data that comes from that rating. We have analyzed to see if there are interesting correlations between how they score on our rating and how well they're doing on some of the issues. Now, that insight is what we used to send to our clients for free. And so we sent to our clients, hey, listen, you remember we have assessed, I don't know, 100 or 200 of your farm organizations in that and that and that country. We took a look at the data. We've compared it to all of the other data that we're having. We know that what you're trying to achieve as an organization, you're trying to work on child labor, or you work on sustainability or other issues. And so our data suggests that this is what you need to do. This is how you can look at it. And we're giving that to our clients for free. So that's, again, our marketing is how we are educating our clients for free, actually. But of course, that tastes very good for them. They want to do more. And we can say, listen, we can answer 10 questions to you. And here are already 2 questions for you for free. Now, of course, what we're hoping for is that they will also want to see the other 8 questions answered. And that's how we want to attract them as a follow-up client. So the most practical thing is we're educating our clients. We're showing them what a new reality could look like, rather than that we wait until they are clients and only then we give it to them. No, we're already giving these insights to our clients for free. We're educating them in the hope that they will come back and will use us more.
Very, very great. Awesome. Yeah, I think it's very important that you base your marketing on education. It's a very important key point. And in comparison to marketing best practices, do you also have a story to share, something that didn't went really well in marketing? Maybe a tool or a technique that wasn't that successful?
I think I've made all the mistakes in the book. and continue to do so, not just on marketing, but on every element of the business, particularly on marketing. I think I'm not sure if it was a mistake. A mistake would be like, if I would do it all over again, would I have done it differently? And I'm not sure if I could at that moment, is that for a long time, particularly in the starting phase, we were short on cash, if you will, right? And that's, which is partly normal in that phase. And we took marketing as something like, that's just a nice to have. So we used interns, right? And whatever we have, that's already good enough. We now know, by having more senior and expert people on board, what the difference is and what the difference that can make on your business. But if you don't have that resources, what do? I mean, hiring external people or consultants or senior people can actually kill you cash-wise. So I'm not sure if we had a choice, but it's not something I would recommend. This having professional marketeers that understand your business, that understand what you're trying to do and educate your clients and always think from your client point of view is crucial. And also, and this is perhaps also a little bit my personality, besides I love being on stage to do the presentations, I might also be a little bit solution push, right? So rather than being very interested in what the client wants, there is something in me that says, no, I already know what you want and here it is, right? Just buy it. And you need a good marketing person, or I need a good marketing person to help remind me, like, no, it's the other way around. And so for me, that's very important. So some lessons or mistakes that I learned in the last couple of years.
Yeah, you were already talking about the lessons you learned in the beginning of just starting out. Can you maybe share some tips that you would recommend to social startups them at the beginning, what they should do, what they could do, and how can they become seen and known very good?
Yeah, I got a couple of points of advice that I think will be very useful. If I look around, there is in the Netherlands where I live, but also in other countries when I'm visiting, I see a lot of young people who want to become a social entrepreneur or start a social enterprise. There is no shortage of ideals or idealism and good intentions. There is a lack of business sense. So there is a lot of people want to change the world and work very hard, but I wish that they were a little bit more business savvy. How do you set up a good organization? What is your business model? How do you make money? How do you serve your clients? How do you make sure that there's an organization around you so that not everything depends on you, which was for me for a long time also a struggle, because the clients are used to the founder and they always want the founder. So how do you organize it at some point that it becomes scalable and you are less necessary, or you can play another role, which in my case is be on stage or write a book or have clients, meetings with my clients. So I see a lot of people with an idea like, oh my God, money is dirty because it's the root of all evil. It's not spiritual. We're trying to save the world, so it's not about money. I can tell you one thing, it is about money while you save the world. And these things go hand in hand, but I wish that a lot of social entrepreneurs know that before they start and not find that out when they are bankrupt or when they find out that they cannot pay their mortgage, but hey, we're working so hard to save the world. So they really go hand in hand. I would say that's one and two, be more business savvy and make sure that you have a business model and that you are able to make money. A third one is I see a lot of social entrepreneurs with great ideas, with great intentions, with enormous motivation to change the world, but they have very poor communication. They are not able to sit in front of somebody and have a good conversation and explain, this is what we do, this is why we do, and 1, 2, 3, and this is the opportunity for you. They are not able to make great presentations. And I would say, particularly for the founders, communication is everything. If you are not able to communicate, communication is persuasion, and persuasion you need for everything, not just to get clients, but also to persuade people to work for you. I mean, why would somebody work for you if you just started and there's nothing in your business? It's not salary. And so you need to give purpose to the fact that other people want to work for you. You need to be able to be on stage and paint the picture of a new world that is much more attractive than the old world. So for that, you need to be able to communicate. And I wish, and perhaps that's what I'm going to do, is help social entrepreneurs be able to pitch with confidence their idea. It's paid marketing, but it's also the only way to bring forward your idea. And too many of them are stuttering, lack confidence, not able to explain what it is they're doing, but in meanwhile, work their ass off, not get making any money. And I mean, you agree with me, but that will not change the world. So here are three things: more business savviness, make sure you have a good business model, and three is learn how to communicate.
Very, very important things, definitely. And do you think social businesses should market their businesses differently than classical businesses? And how do you think sustainability and marketing can fit each other?
If you are selling a product which is more sustainable, I don't know, you're having a coffee brand which is sustainable, or you're selling organic apples or whatever, then of course you need to differentiate yourself and stipulate the fact that this product is different than the other product. But that is nothing new. Also, the other apples and also the other coffee brands will do that. But you probably will use the argument, hey, I'm different because I'm also sustainable. In my case, I am a consultancy firm. And of course, I market myself as we are experts in solving these sustainability issues. And I use that to differentiate myself from a lot of other consultancy firms. But then pretty soon after that, I need to tick the same boxes as the other consultancy firms. I need to have a good team. I need to have a good track record. I need to know what I'm talking about. I need to know, have my models, all that kind of stuff. So yes, use it, but it's not enough. Just that fact alone that you want to do something better for the world will not get you there. It's one of the differentiators. And so from the 10 boxes, you need to be good at all 10 of them. 9 is just plain business. And the 1 is, okay, trying to do something more sustainable. Use it. But don't forget the other 9. At the end of the day, you're competing against the rest of the world who are also need to differentiate themselves. So is it marketing is key? Use the fact that you're sustainable, but just saying, oh, look at me, how I'm therefore you need to buy from me or work with me is, in my world, at least in my experience, is not enough. It could be for donors, by the way. But if you're on the business side, if you're not an NGO, but if you're a business, it's not enough. And your last question, was it about sustainability and marketing? Does it
fit each other?
Oh, absolutely. But not so much. I think I'm going to repeat the same thing that how I started. Marketing is key. Marketing is everything. Also for a sustainable organization that wants to be a social enterprise. And so if you're not marketing yourself well, nobody will hear about you. Nobody will understand why they need to do business with you. Nobody will understand why they need to call you. Nobody understands why you're so special. I want to throw in one more thing, which I'm thinking about now. I'm talking about advice for the others. It has to do with this knowing how to communicate. It's also know how to sell. Communication is persuasion. Selling is persuasion. And a lot of people think when they talk about selling about a used car dealer and something unethical and pushy and not listening. In fact, I completely disagree. A good seller listens very well, makes rapport with the client and understands what the client needs, really needs, and then present its solution as a way forward. I think if you truly, and this is what's lacking a lot, if you truly believe that what you have is valuable, you're not selling it, then what are you doing? You're withholding your clients from an important solution. Now, the problem is that two things. One is not everybody truly believes that what they have is really a solution. I mean, that requires a lot of confidence. And people will say, yeah, but why do I need to sell it? Why don't they just ask for it? Why don't they just buy it from me? Why do I need to persuade them? Well, it's because the client has no idea that you have the solution. And so selling is another one which I think, or which I hope, social entrepreneurs will do much better than the other entrepreneurs. But in my experience, particularly the social entrepreneurs are more shy in that aspect because they think it's dirty, it's not ethical. So communication and selling, absolutely.
Awesome, very great. Can you, in the end of the interview, maybe share a call to action or a single task that the audience can apply immediately today to improve their marketing?
If you learn on how to explain your business, your idea, your vision with energy, with conviction in 10 minutes time on the stage. If you cannot do that, then this is your very first assignment. Then if you cannot do that, and then those who will listen to this podcast, they will know if they can do it or cannot do it. And my suggestion is that 9 out of 10, well, if they're honest to themselves, will know that they are not able to present their idea in a convincing way. Then that's your task. And why do I know it? Because public speaking, standing in front of groups is the number one fear of almost everybody. It's a bigger fear than dying. So it's interesting, right? People are more scared to talk at the funeral than to actually lie in the casket. And that has everything to do with confidence and everything to do with what do people think of me. But if you cannot stand in front of a group of 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, and stand there with pure conviction that your vision, your product, your idea is absolutely what is necessary, and you are not getting at least 10 or 20 responses out of the audience where people say, I want to work with you, or I want to invest in you, or I want to buy from you, then what are you doing? And so learn this skill. Ask yourself, why am I afraid? What are my associations with speaking in front of a group? Why am I so concerned with what people think of me? Every social entrepreneur will get a thousand times no. I mean, that's a given. And so there's already, people will have an opinion about you no matter what. People will say no matter what. But what's withholding you to stand in front of the groups and to really pour your heart and soul out and say, this is what I believe in, and this is why it's important, and this is what the benefit is for you. Again, if you don't know how to do this, my call to action is learn this skill, and it will serve you for the rest of your life.
I can absolutely agree with you on this point. It's very important. So thank you very much for the interview and being on this podcast. I really, really enjoyed it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for having me. And thank you for all the listeners. I hope you're still here. And if you want to shoot me an email, check me out on LinkedIn, Lucas Simons. And there you can also track what we're doing. Lucas Simons, New Foresight and Scope Insights. And the book is Changing the Food Game. Thank you so much.